So, dear friends, so today I just want to ask you one question before we start. So we're contemplating on the practice. And sometimes our practice gets boring. If I don't know whether you know this or not, but I know that. So my question to you is, how do you make the practice so that you don't make the practice boring? Because that, I think that many people give up in the practice because there's obstacle, but there's also you practice a while, and then your practice gets boring. Sometimes you repeat, you get boring. So I contemplate on that, and So I just want to pose a question for everybody. I think if you really practice, you will encounter this on your path. Even in your life, you know, sometimes worry life, sometimes you got really boring in your life. And you seem like there is no meaning, nothing. Even though you are living in a good house, a beautiful house, maybe a good landscape. Everything you have, but you feel so much boring, and you want to retreat into your own corner, and you don't want to do anything. In the West, we can say that it's depression. It can be depression. So you feel so, life has no meaning. It doesn't matter what you have. So how can or what can you do to bring that up, you know, to boost up your energy? Because I do the computer and say, oh, computer boosts fast, but sometimes it boosts slow too. So, and this life, our practice, sometimes our practice is very slow. It's just like computer because it's virus. It's got so much stuff in it, it's running so slow. The way you sit in your the way and you feel boring. So how can you make your practice interesting? That's the question I think is we should pose to ourselves. You will encounter this kind of boring in your practice. If you really practice. So I want you to share a little bit on that. The difficulty is okay, it's there, but some more or less. But sometimes we feel very boring. It doesn't matter what path you take. It doesn't matter what kind of religion you are. Practicing, you will encounter these moments in your practice. Sometimes you be, even though you are being in a group, in a community, but you feel very boring. You feel boring and lonely. So what can you make? What can you do to bring that up? Boost your energy up. Boost your motivation up. Otherwise, you will give up your practice, not later or sooner, I bet. So we have to, sometimes we practice and questions come up. A lot of questions come in our practice. But if we able to contemplate, you know, and take it serious, take it carefully, in your heart, that kind of person. And I think that is a practical question. So can you share each of you? I think each of us is individual, we encounter that. So can you share a bit of your experience in that, whatever you have? And I will share mine. So I will be the last one to share.
Always a struggle, and what I found, particularly like with sitting meditation, sometimes I need to do something different. And walking meditation really helps me, especially like a trip to the mountains and go for a hike. I found is a great way just to do something different and get me out in nature and feel part of everything. So that's one way I found that just to do something, break up the pattern, try a different way of practice, and that helps me.
Thank you, Mary.
It was nice to do walking meditation last week and change the routine and just do, you know, the same thing all the time. I guess it kind of makes you more mindful because you have to think. That's what I like about traveling, and you know, the language is different and the culture is different. I think I'm more mindful when I'm traveling, when I'm on, you know, quote unquote vacation, because I do have to be mindful and I do have to think and consciously doing things and not just going through the routine. And on the flip side, though, I wonder if the question is, I guess, comes back to mindfulness. I mean, we can think of it as, and I agree, you know, kind of the waves, you know, there's good days and bad days, or good weeks and bad weeks, or, you know, sometimes you come to a day of mindfulness and you're like, wow, that was great, so energized. And other times you're like, okay, yeah, sit here. What do I have to do afterwards? but I wonder if the question is it mindfulness or not? I think maybe sometimes we're not focused, but we're so unmindful that we don't know we're not focused. And other times we're mindful enough to realize that. And I guess you could debate about which is better or worse. But I think the key for me is that if I realize I'm not thinking in a positive or constructive way, to at least realize that. But I agree that changing up the routine and helps.
Yeah, I find myself at times when I'm on my bench, I get agitated and my mind just keeps going and going and going. And so I either change the position that I'm doing my meditation. Instead of kneeling, I'll kneel on a cushion. Or I'll sit on a cushion the regular way, but I can't sit very long because my hips aren't comfortable in that position, so I won't sit as long. I'll get up and I'll sit in a chair. Sometimes I'll lie down and put my hands on my lower abdomen to help me keep my focus. The last few days I said forget the meditation, and I did sometimes I'll walk. The dogs don't like it when I walk that slow, but I do it. This morning I had tea meditation with Thich. I have a picture of Thich Nhat Hanh. I don't know if you remember seeing it on my altar table.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought, okay, I'm going to have a tea meditation with Thich instead of closing my eyes and trying to empty my mind. I'll try to focus on what I'm doing, which is drinking tea. And so I vary it just to kind of change it a little. I did really well with the Vipassana up until, it's about a month now. I was meditating an hour a day in the morning, and then bit by bit I get more and more physically agitated and I just couldn't stay with it, which I saw someone that was at the same Vipassana retreat, and I asked her how long she managed, and she said 5 days. So I thought, well, I did really good. But without having that interaction with other people that are doing that same thing, it's hard to hold on to. I still have my timer set for an hour, but I'm not getting a whole lot past a half hour anymore.
Mm.
But I find if I vary it, it helps.
Recommend if you can't afford to travel, just practice with two children, because they make you have to think, they change the routine, they offer you new insights that you're not necessarily ready for. So it's, I think practicing with my kids challenges me, because I'm committed to it, to come up with new things. And with our Sangha on Thursday, we're always going, okay, what are we going to do next week? You know, and also moving with the kids and letting go of our own set ways can actually bring some new awarenesses in. And then for me, reading sometimes, getting, if it's a new teacher or a new teaching or just something to stimulate some new ways of looking at things,
mm-hmm.
Is another way.
Didn't know how long I should wait, knowing I'd be next to bow in. I agree with all the insight that's been given so far with changing a routine or changing a practice if sitting isn't working for you. And I try to think back to times when I'm very energized to practice, and it's times that something has really sparked my intention to practice, whether it's a teacher or a book or a day of mindfulness or an experience, and I would sometimes try to recreate that with a new book or a new way of practicing. And then something that's working its way in the depths of my mind is the idea that working with what you are presented with, working with that obstacle, is what I'm trying to develop. Again, it's a half-formed thought, and I'm putting it out as a half-formed thought, but at a time when the intense boredom comes up, just completely letting it be there and just being bored and looking at what that is. And in the limited times that it's happened that I've tried to look at it, it's always passed. You know, it's always gone back to a period of a lack of boredom or an interest again. So I offer that developing thought out for anybody.
Yeah. Thank you for all the sharings, all the insight. Yeah, I think each of us will have some individual way to working with our boredom. As we really practice, we find a way that to boost up our energy of practice or continue on our desire to practice. As you know that our mind is always, the quality of our mind, true mind, is always fresh, new, genuine, and illuminate. That's the quality of our mind, the true mind. But because we have been covering by all this junk. But the junk is also part of mind. It's nothing is out of mind. That's how our mind created. Destructive mind. Create. So when we practice, we'll be careful when we the work escaping. We can use some of the escape from that if we don't mindful. You know, it's easy to escape and run away. And that's easy tendencies in our life. You know, if you don't want something, you try to escape. That's the dead end. You know, this is one way out: is to escape or to run away from that, from our boring. And Aaron is part of struggling. So I think that is where we need to work with. As you say, you always, without struggle, without obstacle, there is nothing to work on, right? Nothing to work on. So that is what we need to work with, at, with our minds, boring mind. And as Lisa said, I think is what I contemplate that is true. Work with children, and work with children is because children always they have a quality of fresh. We also have a quality of fresh, but because we are being covered by too much of or others obstacle. The children is more fresh, but they are very hyperactive. Have a lot of energies always run. So we work with children, I think this is one way to, because I've been working with children too, you know, like not children but like other elementary students. They have a lot of energies and they're very hyper. And our minds also have some kind of tendency that sometimes we have a lot of hyper energies. We don't know what we do. You know? We feel some kind of hardness in our body, in our mind. And that's kind of agitating energies. Sometimes we want to sit still but can't. You know, we always want to run. Yeah. If you really practice, you know that energies. You all want to, because there's some kind of push in you, and it's kind of lacking of stillness in you, the stillness. So if you really mindful, you recognize that energy is in you. So that's why when we practice, once in a while we not able to be sit still, and we try to run and try to grab different things. You know, maybe open a book and you read just only a few pages, and you lay it down, and your thought get distracted, and you do something else. I don't know if that happened to you or not, but it's happened to me. And I know that, that's the energy, because the more you practice, the more the some kind of agitate and which is provoking in you. But you not do one thing, but it's not complete, and you put that down, and you get another thing to do. And we just keep running and grasping one thing after another. That's how our destructive thoughts. Because you feel that there is a lacking of stillness and lacking something in your body, in your mind. And that energy always pushes us. That's why people do different things to cover that. Or you can take jogging, you know. But even though we do, but we recognize that energy is that in us. That's nice. Recognize that energy. And the more you force, the more you're struggling. So the best thing is to recognize and embrace, not not to resist. That's how I see it. You can run or you can jog, but you can know that that energy in you. Someday you feel good, but someday you feel not really at rest at all. That's why people overeat. One of my friends who doing my computer, and he said I couldn't stop eating. I know that his restless energy in him. I have to eat. So he tried to cover that. He didn't know, he didn't have the tools to recognize that energy and restless energy. You have to walk back and forth and, you know, open the feature, but and stop back and return back many times, you know. But he say that I know that there's nothing there, but I have to return to open my refrigerator and look at it, you know. At least I grab something. But if you practice, you know that energy is energy. That's why people get overeating and get big. What is that?
Obese.
Obedience.
Obese.
Yeah, that's one of the illness in our society today. If you study psychology, you know that. And as we practice in mindfulness, we know that that is the restless energies. People couldn't hold anything, so that is food. Is the one thing that they can do and eat. Sometimes they don't feel hungry, but they just eat. That is in our society today. It's obese. So as we practice, we have to recognize that kind of, everybody have that kind of energy, more or less, you know, more or less. But if you're a good practitioner, you know and you recognize that. You know. And the more you eat, the more you get bigger and you get ill, and you get physical illness from that. And we don't know, you see. That's why the Buddha is very skillful. He say moderate eating, you see. More eating, and mostly people eat at night, and that is they accumulate all the fat, because the body, you couldn't do anything, and you eat and you just lay there, and how can your body move? And people get fat in that, obese in that, and they got all kind of disease in that. So the practice is to mindful in our eating in that way, and mindful in our eating in a way that we are able to manipulate, able to regulate our unrest energies. And that's all have to do with our physical body and mentalities, the practice. So the path is that if we're able to do that, that is we are serving ourselves, because our talking relate to our, you know, discourse on happiness. But one sentence say, able to serve yourself. The path of service. And to support your parents. So if you're able to do that, you're able to support your parents in that way. So the first sentence is to be able to serve and support your parents. But the first, the path of serving is the first thing is to serve yourself, your body, your mind. And if you're able to serve your yourself, that means you're serving your parents, supporting your parents. So the teaching of the Buddha is very practical in our everyday life, how we look at our way, different way to look at the practice. So that's why it's a fresh new way to look at our path of service, our path of way of life, of living. So we all just, you know, working around to see different angle between how to work our body and our mind. That's what Buddhism is. Buddhism means is to work, to try to bring the body and the mind together. But how to work with the body, and then that how it's related to the mind. The Buddhas refused to answer the question metaphysical he said that he's not refused, but he said that it's not a practical way to deal with our own suffering. So what the Buddha teaches is to deal with, to transform, to deal with our own suffering. That's the point the Buddha wants to us to know and understand, to carry across the message and the practice of the Buddha. And the more you practice, the more you create, you generate the insight. And you have, each individual have their own unique insight, you know, very unique insights. So the Buddha never limits on any individual. You know? That's why he never emphasized about something that's beyond our hand. Nothing about God. You know what it means about God? But he said, deal with human. That's a two-word word. Deal with the suffering of the human. The path, how to serve human. And he never emphasized, you know, like God is the only way, or the only Jesus. He's individually said, look at everyone, have a unique insight, a unique Buddha. And if we're able to do that for ourselves, and we really walk with the path, close to the path of the Buddha, to do with that, to serve ourselves. And that is returning meaning, returning to the meaning of the Buddha. First is to self-realization. You know, we talk around and then we return to that. Self-realization, the first meaning of the Buddha. Later on we say other realizations. So first you search yourself, right? Make yourself, bring your unrest energy into rest energies. Search yourself. And then that, from that, you can look out. You can see what is around you, what is other. And then you serve others. And then the path is complete. So that's his three basics, meaning of Buddha. So we're talking around, and then we see that, oh yeah, that's what it is and how it is. So today I just want to pose a question to you, you know, how to work with yourself all the time. You really put some kind of intention or desire into your practice. All the time you have some kind of inside question coming out. You know, you make a step, and right at that moment, if you really have some kind of stillness, you have an insight born at that moment right away. And it's very clear. And the more you have that, the more you develop self-confidence in your practice. Self-confidence. So self-confidence in the practice is very important because of the insight that you generate. It's born within you, in your practice. So that's why you develop a lot of, more confidence in your practice. And whatever is come, all struggle come, you don't shake. You know? You don't get distracted from that. You say that this is what I need to work with. This is, and then slowly you don't get bored. You know, that's why. And you develop more interest in your practice. Just like you watch a game, a football game that you like. And sometimes they have a new technique throwing the ball. And you say, ah, yes. Just like you develop your practice like that. Some realization. You say, ah, this is the way. Yeah. So you overcome your boredom by perhaps some kind of ambition. In your practice, what about ambition? For example, if you have some ambition about football, you really like to watch football, and say it's my practice, and your practice should be like that. You know, like play soccer, some game that you really like. So you develop your practice like that. So that's how I just want to share you with that question today. So you don't have to, like, sometimes we don't have to study a lot, but you study what is practical, what is real insight, you know. And for you. Yeah, so today I just want to share with you a little bit of that. I don't want you to come just only, you know, to waste your time to come in here just only, you know, unless you share something, share. And as I told you before, we come here not only for me to teach only or to share only, but everyone. We call collective insight, and it's always like that. The Buddha teaches, and sometimes he allows his student to teach too. And we do that to support each one of us in our practice. Is that a question?
Yeah, I was going to share something when I was speaking with one of the monastics last summer at the retreat. One of the things that helped me, and that has come back to me when I've been frustrated or my own, what I consider my lack of progress or whatever, is that to remember that the practice works. And I think he said, now don't forget, remember that you've experienced it, you know it works. And I think that sort of trusting in the practice for me, that sort of helps me let go of whatever agitation, especially if the agitation is related to I'm not doing this right or I'm not good enough, or but just to trust in it can let some of the other stuff go and can allow the stillness to come back. So just, and I think we're fortunate having had those waves up and down, that we've had those crests, and we know that it can work. And to have seen when we've been in those valleys that continuing at some level, it's benefited us. So that's the other piece I just wanted to share.
Thank you, Lisa. So the more, I think the more you practice, you really will develop some kind of trust and confidence in your practice. And because you have the insight, that's what makes you not to hear this like blind trust or blind faith. But it has to go with the insight, where the insight is born. And that you have more confidence. That confidence is confirmed by the insight, not confirmed by like blind faith. Because you experience that. Not maybe several times, not just only one time, you know. And that's what happened to the Buddha. He experienced through his practice, you know, through all his aesthetic practice and things like that. You know. And I think we do that too. Okay, so I think we're going to stop here, and then we will have our meditations. So, thank you for your sharing. So I will invite Twisao the bell, so we stop here.